Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, I'm Eric Estep.
And I'm Scott Reevely.
And this is the City on a Hill podcast. Welcome back, listeners. Welcome back, Scott.
Welcome back, Ariel.
Oh, thank you. You're a little vulnerable with your co-host, and you tell him how some people misspell your name to be Ariel, and then he blasted onto the public.
Well, it's because it auto-corrected to Africa here on my notes, so I'm sorry. I could have called you Africa, but
it's all good. I've been dealing with this my whole life. It's fine.
Well, yeah. I've got the same thing because I go by my middle name, and so that doesn't work very well either.
Is there anything new that's happened this week for you?
Well, anything new? Am I supposed to have something?
No, I'm just going for it.
Do you know something I don't know? We got electricity in our main floor of our house, and we got
new
appliances.
First time, guys. He's never had electricity.
It's actually, electricity's neato.
Guys, you aren't going to believe this technology.
I know.
You thought phones were cool.
Yeah, you can like flip a switch and the whole room brightens up.
It's amazing. Because you haven't had electricity for a little while.
For a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because we were redoing our kitchen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the whole first main floor is being redone. We've done the floor. We've done new lights. Moved a wall in a little bit, so the whole floor was disrupted. And just last week, we got all those things.
Nice.
And yeah, it is nice. And Marcia said she had a day off today and was moving back into the cupboard. So we'll see.
Sweet.
I don't know what I'll find when I get home.
That's great, though. That's great news.
So that's what's new for me. What's new for you?
Oh, well, I ran a half marathon last week. That was exciting. And this is probably more important. We, an hour ago, 2 hours ago, I don't know, not that long ago, we closed on a house. So
there you go.
We will be moving into a house, and that's been a process.
Congratulations.
So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
You heard it here first, folks. So yeah, might as well move into a house in the middle of election season, and then we can watch all the stuff from a new house. We talked about the spreadsheets last week. I'm gonna bring the spreadsheets with me.
To the new house.
To the new house, and all my tabs. We're going to watch that election. It's going to be fantastic.
Wow.
I haven't had any takers ask me for all my tabs.
Really? They haven't been beating down your door?
Nope. It's not a hot item.
Well, it's a little bit, it just gets a little, I don't know, darker isn't the right word, but just less and less. I get more and more. Disillusioned as we get closer, I think. Mm. And not that I was ever illusioned, but it just seems like I was hopeful that this time the Christians wouldn't get quite as wound up in the election as they did before. And I don't know why I thought that. Partly I think you and I were talking about just some of the books that have been written between the last election cycle and this one. There's some really good books, and we've talked to some of the authors, on here, and we've had just really been helped by many of them. And we get down the road a little ways, and I'm thinking that those books are helping the church, and I want them to help the church. And then we get closer and closer, and all of a sudden everyone's wound around the axle about freedom and Marxism and all the things.
Those are all the things, folks. Freedom and Marxism.
Everything in between.
Well, yeah, and I'm remembering back in 2019, 2018, I was trying to prep kind of a class to help people, and I had to not scrape the bottom of the barrel, but there weren't books to be read. Yeah. It was pretty difficult, and you had to kind of connect the dots on your own a little bit and figure out what are the applications of this, and there's a lot of good stuff that's come out, and I'm... I know personally it's helped me as a pastor think about these things, and I know it's helped other pastors, but it seems like it hasn't filtered all the way through, and there's not this just strong, stalwart church going, you know what, we're not going to be swayed by this crazy crazy way of talking about an election.
Well, and swayed by swayed, what I hear when you say swayed by an election is I'm not going to be afraid. Again, and I'm almost always, that's the
category.
That's the thing that really frustrates me, is that the church is becoming afraid again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, of what?
Mm-hmm.
Of what, really? I mean, the American church resides in the best country in the world, really, with the most religious freedom and wealth beyond most of the mm-hmm. world's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all like down in the dumps about this and afraid that it's all. And I think that's probably tells as much about our materialism as it does about anything.
Mm.
We're afraid we may lose some of that.
Sure.
You know, we talk about losing religious freedom, but I don't think we're in much danger.
Well, from a court perspective, it's never been stronger than it is right now.
Right.
And you just talked about material reasons and country. I agree with all those reasons. Those are all physical reasons that the church could be comfortable in. Not fearful, but there's also the far bigger reasons, like whose hand do we hold? We hold the hand of Jesus, and he's not going away, and he cannot be thwarted, and he, his reign will not be taken away or moved, and to be walking through really just great material circumstances, and to have that as your identity, as your connection to God, and then still engage, oh, I'm going to be fearful because I might, because of the material circumstances, like it just, it's completely disconnected from the reality as it is.
Yeah, if that's your identity, I think you used the right word there, because if your identity is that, you're going to be fine. If your mm-hmm. identity is American, then you might be nervous.
Sure.
If your identity is Republican or Democrat, you're going to be more nervous.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and that's what makes me sad. The trading of identities, when you have the identity of heir with Christ as a possibility, and you go, well, you know, I like this other one a little bit better, and I'm going to put my red or blue hat on, and I really like that. Like, wow, we gave up that for this? Really? That's a really silly game to play. And it just comes, that the volume of that exchange gets louder and louder as we get closer and closer to November 5th.
I just read this morning, Colossians chapter 3, let this mind, no, that's the wrong verse, but set your mind on things above, not on earthly things,
mm-hmm.
and where talks about your life is hidden with Christ in God. And, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to get all fired up about an election? Really? It's just a struggle for me. Why would you trade that, right? This is what I read this morning. If you've been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on things that are on earth. For you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Now that's, if there ever was an identity statement, it's that. Mm-hmm. You know, the old life, your old identity is gone. You have a new identity hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you'll also appear with him in glory. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's.
It's so good.
You know, we can just stop. This is a full episode right here. But anyway, that's not what we were going to talk about.
We just stumbled on some good stuff.
I know. When you stub your toe on
some
gold.
Should we go stumble on some not good stuff?
When you stub your toe on some gold, you just need to stop and look at it for a minute. But anyway, that's what I read this morning, and I think that's really encouraging. And should be the evangelical message, shall mm-hmm. we say it that mm-hmm. way?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great if the evangelical message was, you know what, church, your life is hid with Christ and God, and
right.
When he is your life, he's going to return, and you're going to be fine.
And what if, as one big community, we all anticipated false identity stories coming up and go, oh, let's raise the volume and remind everyone, and it just got louder every election season that, yeah, your identity is hidden with Christ in God.
Yeah, that might be
that'd be cool.
A good ambition.
Yeah. Right?
So Anyway, it just seems like, though, as we were talking about it, the election's, 3 weeks away as we record this, and it seems like everyone's kind of doubling down on their partisanship, which I was hopeful might be different this time, right? And so I don't know what magazines you subscribe to, but I...
A few.
You subscribe to some. I don't subscribe to any, but they have been subscribed for me as gifts. And that's kind of what I'm wanting to talk about here today.
All right, bring it on. What do you got?
There are two magazines that have been gifted to me. One is called The Stand. Now, The Stand is American Family Association journal, and The Stand is also a taco place in Seaside, which is fantastic. But unfortunately, this is not that.
This has nothing to do with tacos.
This is not that fantastic. But The Stand is one, and Decision Magazine is the other. And both those have been given to me.
And the Decision Magazine, you said AFA for The Stand, and Decision Magazine is from?
Billy Graham Association.
Billy Graham. Okay.
Billy Graham Evangelical Association.
Evangelistic.
Evangelistic Association. I really think we should keep evangelistic in there.
Yeah. Well, and the mission, I'm just going to read this. I just grabbed it, listeners. This is, just like an NPR episode or something. AFA's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals and families to transform American culture and to give aid to the church here and abroad in its calling to fulfill the Great Commission. So a similar evangelistic association or Great Commission emphasized. Yeah. End.
Which are both would be
we like
really
things.
Good ends. Yeah. So anyway, but the thing that caught my eye was, I don't always maybe read the magazines that are subscribed to for me, but I look at the covers, and the covers were this. On The Stand, the latest issue said, America, splintered, spiraling, suffering. And I just thought, there is some splintering and there is some, there's all of that, but that's far from the whole story. I mean, there's a lot about America that needs to be celebrated and enjoyed. And why is that story not being told in this issue? Because
it's election season.
Because election season. Why wouldn't you tell that story in election season?
Because you don't want to muddy the waters for what you're trying to achieve.
That doesn't tell the story you want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
The story you want to tell is one that's, discouraging, so you need to make some sort of a voting change, really. Splintered, spiraling, and suffering. That's fine, right? The latest issue of Decision Magazine, subtitled The Evangelical Voice for Today, is this. America's future in the balance, socialism versus freedom. And Kamala Harris's pictures above socialism and Donald Trump's pictures above freedom. And I thought, I may not need to read the rest of this magazine because I already know kind of everything they want to communicate.
Sorry.
Really. What is
well,
America?
I've thumbed through these, and we've talked about these a little bit. And one of the things I realized was, I subscribe to several magazines, and actually try to get stuff. I try to get thoughtful people from other multiple sides of a spectrum, trying to argue their points and that type of thing. And I kind of realized I don't have a lot of this type of. There's some fear-mongering here. There's some rays of concern here. I read some magazines that I don't necessarily agree with that will get a little bit scared.
Fired up,
scared, a little bit Chicken Little, the sky's falling down. But generally, I don't agree with them anyway, and I can kind of go, okay, that's interesting. That's their feeling about this thing. And it just struck me that if I had this type of input going on all the time, well, one, you shared some stuff with me, and I got fired up as it is. But if this was a constant input into my life, I don't know that I'd be fearful. I think I'd be frustrated and angry often, and with whoever they would convince me to be angry about. And it's just not a helpful way to go about life. And I was just surprised, like, yeah, it reminded me of attack ads in the campaign. And
right.
we're getting there. We're 3 weeks out. I've already seen some, not many of the negative ones yet, but they are not stress-inducing, but they're agitating. Even if you just look at them for a little bit and throw them away, they're agitating, they're incredibly annoying, and also just like not truthful generally. And as someone who's had attack ads written about them.
Oh, nice.
That's on my wall of achievements right there. But it just, man, I would never willingly subscribe to that type of tone constantly. It's just an unhelpful tone.
So the tone of splintered, spiraling, and suffering, you'd want something a little more uplifting than that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah. Or even just like who subscribes to political ads? You don't subscribe to political ads. That's not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's the feeling I had in one of the reactions.
Well, in all fairness, one of the reasons I thought we should talk about this is that these magazines appear as political ads.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing that is.
Well, and listeners, I had to dig pretty hard to find the mission of the magazine, which I just read. It's in fine print.
Well,
on
you
page.
Didn't find the other one.
I didn't find the other one. That's right.
Yeah.
But if you're just looking at the covers, I recognize this. This is the stuff I get in my mailbox during election season. It looks the same.
Right.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be maybe telling just to, so that you all don't have to subscribe to these magazines for me just to say a little bit of what's in here. And so we can start with The Stand. I got that first. So we'll start in chronological order. But on page 4, the vice president of the AFA says, America is at the crossroads, with the choice for our highest office being a candidate with strong Marxist leanings or one who still respects the Constitution and limited government. And that was hard to read, and with a straight face anyway, I guess, because it's, how does it strike you, Eric?
He just dodges it. That was hard to read. What do you think, Eric?
Yes.
I think the whole thing is frustratingly ridiculous. We're going to talk about Harris. It's talking about Harris and Trump, right? Let's just mm-hmm. make that obvious. And about the highest office. And it uses the language Marxist. So that's a trigger word. I'm supposed to hate everything's Marxist. So of course mm-hmm. that person is inappropriate because of strong Marxist leanings. I'd want to know, like, what do you mean by that, for one? What is it you're referring to? And then to juxtapose that to a Donald Trump, who apparently is one who still respects the Constitution and limited government, I just have a really hard time with that. I don't think that's true. I think you have to think about, okay, what has someone said and what has someone done? And from a from an action standpoint, we have Trump, who, when he was still president, did not discourage a mob that went towards the Capitol and tried to stop a constitutional proceeding to occur. And then in things that he said, this is a Trump post, actually. He said, do you throw the presidential election results of 2020 out and declare the rightful winner, or do you have a new election? A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. And that's not an old, that's like from a year or two ago. It's not that old. So to have the VP of this publication describe Trump as one who still respects the Constitution, it's like, what are we... I just don't even know what to do with that, because it's mm-hmm. it sounds like, we're going to be like a political action committee and we're going to throw whatever argument is necessary to get you to go the direction we want you to go.
And it's very easy to say, but if it's not
true.
The case, if it's not true, then it's yeah. So we're off to a great start
off
here
to a
with
great
this.
Start.
Actually, I will say on page 5 of the Stand, they have a kind of a feature on Katie Faust. I happened to know her, which I was kind of surprised to see somebody I know in a magazine like this. And she has a podcast called Them Before Us. And it's, she is, I think, I have a lot of respect for her. She is able to speak the truth in a way unlike most people. But I mean, she's very direct, very clear, and really, and kind of is able to speak not like by misrepresenting the Bible or misrepresenting Christianity, but just said, listen, Them Before Us, is this good for children? And she really comes hard against a lot of the progressive, particularly sexual ideas, and just says, is this good for children? And that's her kind of main thing, and she sticks to that, and at least,
that's
what
a great question.
At least what I've heard.
Yeah.
And it should be something that everybody respects. So anyway, I was really happy to see her picture there. So that was...
So you stumbled on some gold again?
I thought, there you go. Yeah. That was good. I was happy to see her there. Then on the next page, there's an article with a red elephant that says GOP stumbles on social issues. And it did point out that, so again, the splintered suffering and all that is, you know, there's some other things in here that I found kind of helpful, but it talked about the in a break from tradition, the new platform refrains from advocating for federal level restrictions on abortion. And it goes on a little bit more to talk about that, and then says, but it does hold firm on these other things, and which is fine, but at least they admit that. And that's good. And then there is this other article about, the article about the splintering. Once we get to the splint, there's an article that has three pages, a splintering page, a spiraling page, and a suffering page. The splintering page says this: with his brash and brawling New York City style, Trump is certainly responsible for some of that division. While the cultural fractures were already present before his first campaign even began, his insults, combativeness, and social media trolling undoubtedly exacerbated the problem. So
that's true.
That is true. And I did kind of pull that quote out of context. And, you know, because it goes on then to say how that wasn't so bad.
Oh.
But... that was the splintering piece of it. Then the spiraling piece I thought was really interesting. There was no description of spiraling. There was just some more, you know, hand-wringing about the trouble using kind of biblical terms, biting and devouring, hating and rebelling, but nothing specific, only pictures that were of like a drag queen and a pregnant man and a grandma holding up a rainbow flag. So it was all pictures. It was not any text about any of it. Those three things were not mentioned. And then the next page is a suffering page. And it cites, talks about the Late Show with Stephen Colbert and praying and voting, but nothing about real suffering. And then it has pictures of a couple homeless camps and a war veteran who needs help. And so I just thought that was kind of interesting. The rest of the magazine was filled with articles about Pastor Appreciation Month, Yom Kippur, pickleball, Halloween, and early voting. And so my take on this was that the content of the thing, except for that Marxist, except for the Marxist leanings paragraph or article, really at the beginning, wasn't as bad as the cover. I mean, the cover was really like, I was depressed just looking at the cover, because America is, you know, splintered, spiraling and suffering, but the magazine itself wasn't quite, you know, so bad. So anyway, that was my stand read there.
But it still leads with a political style.
Yeah, and the pictures are certainly that. I mean, the picture on the front, but the pictures in the splintered, spiraling, and suffering are all descriptive of politicized things, shall we say. And so, you know, that was kind of the first magazine. The second one, Decision Magazine, the voice of the evangelical voice for today, was a little bit different, because they were going to put side by side the things that are the positions that you would find for Harris and Trump. And they were categories like education, border security, family rights, sanctity of life, free speech, free exercise of religion. And all of these had, had little Bible verses along with them. So that you know that these are the biblical issues. Okay. For instance, the sanctity of human life section had this verse, which is a good verse for this. For you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. Psalm 139, verse 13. Then it went on to talk about the Democratic platform and Harris's history, and then the Republican platform and Donald Trump's history. And again, we've talked about this Republican platform before, but the first thing is affirms the 14th Amendment protects the life of the unborn, which is really an interesting way. And that's like language right out of the, I mean, that's quotes the platform.
Yeah, it's like part of the plank, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I thought, that's interesting, because I failed civics, I suppose. I don't know what the, I don't know what the 14th Amendment was, right? Here is, so we affirm, it affirms the 14th Amendment protects the life of the unborn. This is how the 14th Amendment starts. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. And it keeps going. But I just thought that was interesting that the platform says, we think it protects the life of the unborn, when the actual amendment says you must be born before this applies. So
there's a later clause there, just to, in case the listener's saying, that's not the whole thing. It says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. But that's all under the heading, all persons born.
Yeah, so after you're born.
If you're going to be a textualist or an originalist or care about the words of something, it's not clear. The most generous interpretation is that it's not clear that it protects life of the unborn.
Well, it's not clear that it affirms it.
Right.
You know, it's clear that it would affirm life, liberty, and property, but not anything for the unborn. In fact, it's worse than unclear.
Right.
It says you must be born.
You'd have to do some gymnastics to make that work.
Yep. And then, you know, after reading, for you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb, it points out that the Republican platform opposes late-term abortion, which I just thought was, I mean, I'm glad. I mean, oppose, yeah. What about the other ones? And, you know, granted, on the Democratic platform is, you know, it's all bets are off on what they would do to babies that aren't born yet. So I'm not saying that they're equal.
Sure.
I'm just saying that I am disappointed that the Republican platform no longer really represents the sanctity of human life like it did before.
Yeah, as recently as 8 years ago. Well, I think another thing to point out is this is not the only Christian organization or even evangelical organization that puts together a voting type guide every election cycle. I think that the disappointing piece is that the values and emphases of the Republican Party has shifted but the water carrying and helping of the GOP or Republican positions by these organizations has not changed. So even though the Republicans are not caring about or emphasizing or voting in ways they used to, we still have these evangelical organizations going, yep, we're going that direction, even though the direction has changed.
Why do you think that is? That is a great observation that, the Republican Party has changed, but those that threw in with the Republican Party in the Reagan era are still there. And why?
I'm sure there's many answers for why. I think it's back to the identity piece. If I have taken off my, and it might even be subconscious, but if I have taken off my identity's in Christ and I am with him in God and put on my Republican hat and my team is going that way, I don't want to be abandoned by my team. And if this is the team we're on, we're going to go that direction. And there's gains to be made in the political mm-hmm. game for sure. There's power to be secured and all those things. You can create movement. You can accomplish things when you win in elections. Frankly, politics is fun. I can attest to that. But I think we kind of lose the plot a little bit. And when we switch our identities without knowing, go and place more emphasis on belonging to a party or winning an election than we do to our more important identities.
Yeah, actually, that's something I want to give some more thought to. I'm glad you said something about that, because there is this, and some of it's just a lag. I mean, it's like the engine in the train stops and the other cars keep going until this bam, 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 bam. Mm-hmm. They all, hit at the,
sure.
Come well, to stop themselves.
I hope that happens, yes. Yeah. But, 5 months ago, we were talking about this and we said, it's not going to change anything. People are still going to defend this, even though the goalposts have moved. Mm-hmm. We're still going to have, I don't know if we said, we're still going to get voter guides that are going to encourage us to vote a particular direction. But lo and behold, we have voter guides. And I wish it was kind of a halting train stopping on the tracks, because wait a second, this party isn't the party we started, yeah. or we belonged to it 40 years ago. And let's make it clear to listeners, we're not saying, and you should jump to the other party. We're right. just pointing out that an organization that whose aim and end is to be evangelistic, and that's the purpose, they are using that power and clout to essentially be a political action committee for one party.
And not to clearly say either what pro-life really means.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah, so, if you are obscuring or lightly walking around definitions, you're doing that to make one position look more favorable than another. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going on. Like this
like
seems to be our team. Yes. This seems to be our team. So where things would be essentially damning for us in a policy perspective, we're going to obscure that and make that less obvious so that you can just keep moving on and have we can allow you to have a clear conscience in voting a particular way.
Well, there's more work to be done here, I think.
That's okay.
I'm gonna make a note of that, because that is interesting to me. Another section. See, these sections have verses with them. I mentioned, another verse. The section is border security. Okay, border security, and then your Bible verse for border security is
peace. You can't even get it out, folks.
Peace be within your walls and security within your towers. Psalm 122, verse 7.
What do you have to say about that, Scott?
My first thing is I'm speechless, because this has nothing to do with border security. But see, I think the reason I talk about the Bible verses is because presenting it in this way, and really a lot of my concern about this is the presentation, not just that it's a partisan presentation, but that it pretends to be a Christian presentation.
Mm.
And to take a Bible verse like that and say that there is, that we need a border wall, or that you know, we need to have some kind of a, we need to return children to their countries of origin or whatever the case may be on either side.
And have Psalm 122 as support of that.
Is that, I'm just speechless that we could be that irresponsible.
Or illiterate.
Or both. To say that, or to assume that other people are that illiterate, maybe. But
and that's the kind of thing that frustrates me the most. So just to rewind a little bit, Psalm 122 is about Jerusalem, a song of ascent, a song that you would sing when you were going to the temple to worship. So Jerusalem built as a city that is bound firmly together, to which tribes go and the tribes of the Lord, as was decreed for Israel, to give thanks to the name of the Lord. Their thrones of judgment for judgment were set, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May they be secure who love you, peace within your walls and security within your towers. And it keeps going. Obviously not about national security in any way, but they know where Psalm, unless they just Googled walls.
Or security.
Or security and pulled that out. The frustrating thing for me as a leader and someone who teaches people the Bible and wants people to understand what the Bible says, to write something like that down knowing, oh, these people, they don't know the Bible. They don't know it enough to know that this doesn't even have anything to do with that, and put that down anyway as support, is at a pastoral level, is just really frustrating.
Well, and to say that on account of that, border security is a biblical issue because it has Psalm 122.
Mm-hmm.
That's a challenge for me.
And we could take some different scriptures or principles from the Bible and talk about countries and security in a different way, but to do this is
right
irresponsible.
Right. And you know, the other thing for me is that there are other issues that probably have more to do with morals, or maybe as much to, maybe not more, but as much to do with morals, if that's the concern. There's not a section in here about foreign policy. There's not a section in here about taxes, even, or infrastructure, or...
You know why? Because if I'm a political action committee, those issues do not create distinctions between the two candidates. So it's not actually helpful to point those things out, because it won't convince you to vote one way or the other.
Okay. But if you're an evangelical association, that might be different. Is that what you're saying? Maybe.
Well,
we'd hope.
Maybe, yes.
So anyway, the other thing that I noticed about this magazine, they have several call out kind of quotations that they put on these pages where you're to find the biblical issues. And one I thought was really interesting, that says, "Our enemies are waging war on freedom and faith, on science and religion, on history and tradition, on law and democracy, on the family, on children, on America itself." Okay, that was Donald Trump speaking to Moms for Liberty in June 2023. Now, part of what we read before, that other quotation about a brash, brawling New York style, is, you can call it stylistic, but when you call the other Americans your enemies, then, I mean, that really takes it out of Christian terms, I think.
Mm.
You know, my command is to love my enemies,
mm-hmm.
not to identify and vilify my enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they are my enemies, they're also my neighbor. And that's the thing about that quotation, is it just really places the emphasis in the wrong place for Christians in an evangelical magazine. I'm sorry, that is just too much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's another call-out quotation that says, "While it's true that we can't save the country with a single election, the reality is we could very well lose it." So there you go. Just in case you weren't afraid enough, you can't save it, so you can't go positive, but you can sure go negative, so you need to be afraid.
Well, it's fear-mongering again, but it's also, it frames the question incorrectly. He just laughs at me. Listeners, can you believe this?
Well,
well, he talks about a single election that has you assuming that there is one election that matters.
Yep, only one.
And friends, if you're an American voting in an American election, one, you don't vote for a king. So we have a very dispersed, federalized system. So on November 5th? Mm-hmm. November 5th yep. is election day. There are hundreds of elections that are happening on that day. One of them happens to be for the President of the United States, which is the head of the executive branch. That's not even the only branch of our government. You have the Senate, you have the House. I was looking at polling today. Likely there's going to be a Republican Senate, likely a Democratic House. So as it stands right now, regardless of who's the president, you're going to have a divided government, which actually puts everything kind of to a standstill, and you can't just run things through. The things that you would have people fearful about, you can't do that in a divided government, because all branches of government aren't held by the same people.
And they grind to a halt.
They grind to a halt. It's awesome. You should all like divided government. But I, again, we were talking about the assumption of biblical illiteracy on the Bible side. This is assuming, I don't know, constitutional illiteracy on the election side. And I can get people afraid if I say there's one election's going on and you can lose everything if you don't do this correctly. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's not true on all fronts. There's more than one election. There's more than one person getting elected, and you're not going to lose it.
I knew we could get you wound up with this. I saw the cover of these magazines and thought Eric would be fired up about this.
Great. I feel trapped.
Here's another call out quote on page 12. Not voting in order to keep our hands clean is a form of pietism, not Christianity. James, the book of James, is clear that if there is good that we can do, we should. To not do the good we can is sin. Okay? So on the face of it, I'm just going to say the last two sentences. If there's good we can do, we should. If to not do the good we can is sin. That's actually in the Bible. Okay?
Sure.
So we'll agree with those two sentences. But the one that has to do with voting, like how are you going to vote in this election and do good in this presidential election?
I can't even interact with this.
It's like,
well,
what are you trying to get me to do with that quotation?
Right,
what are you trying
to get me to do? Well, if I'm a political action committee, and I want you to vote a particular way.
You want me to vote for freedom and not socialism? That's
yeah,
covered.
probably. Okay. So the assumed good here is to vote a particular way, which I don't know why you're baiting me, Scott. This is ridiculous.
Because you're easy.
You're easy. But if we go, I just get so frustrated with this. It just assumes virtue. Because it is our preferred party, so the good would be to vote for our party, whatever the candidate is. And I have, as a Christian, as a person who loves the Bible, have a hard time attaching virtue to voting for someone that has done the things and said the things that we've observed. And again, I'm not advocating for voting for the other person either. I don't think there's any obvious good that can be done in voting. Especially for the presidential election, in this one,
with these two choices, sure. Yeah.
And then to not berate, but talk about keeping our hands clean. He references James. James also says, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." He is using as his motivation the desire to be clean and unstained and undefiled. So why he would say that's wrong, I don't have any idea. And I want to do, my goal for us, my goal for you guys listeners, is to do something honorable. And I want you all to have a clear conscience too. I want to do what Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews, asks to be prayed for. Pray for us, for we are sure that we have a clear conscience, desiring to act honorably in all things. That's what I want for Christians, is we get through November 5th. On November 6th, you go, I know what? I did the honorable thing. I have a clear conscience. I didn't bend my conscience. I didn't sear my conscience. And there's a variety of things you could do that would, I think you could do multiple things and still have a clear conscience, still have an unseared conscience. But to bind one's conscience to say I'm going to aim you toward one particular thing, and that's the good thing to do, to vote a particular way, I just think that's inaccurate.
Thank you.
I'm sure there's more.
More where that came from. So there is a quote on page 27. Let's see what you think of this quote. God was less concerned that his people figure out how to change a godless empire and more concerned that his people not be conformed to the godless empire in which they lived. That's Kevin DeYoung.
Well done, Kevin. Amen.
Okay.
Well, that's. I think we stumbled on a little gold right there.
Okay.
That is, everything else about the things we've read have kind of conformed themselves to the way this godless empire does politics. But this happens to be God's more concerned about people not being conformed to the godless empire. I think that's a great little.
I think the reason I like that quote is because it admits the empire is godless.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think that's some of why you can have an evangelical association claiming that there is a good way to vote that is going to you're going to sin if you don't do that. You're missing it when, in effect, he's admitting it's a godless empire. And that, I think, is something that we need to take seriously. So,
mm-hmm. And that should inform, if we live in a godless empire, we do, that should inform what you are surprised about. So you talked about the pictures with the rainbow flags and the drag queens and all that stuff. If you live in a godless empire, you shouldn't be surprised by that. That should not leave you aghast. Oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. Of course it's happening. We are surrounded by people who don't know Yahweh, who don't know the King. And if we are evangelistic in our posture, we ought to be running towards them saying, can I tell you about Jesus? Can I love you and become friends with you because I belong to the King of the universe and my identity is wrapped up in him, not in all this stuff that is causing fear around me. But I belong to the King of the universe, and he will not be thwarted, and I'd love for you to be connected with him as well. So I'd just don't be surprised when there's craziness around you.
So here's some craziness in the next quotation. This is by Pat Boone, and he's draped in a flag as he says, we are spiritually and biblically ignorant and illiterate. We can't say anymore that we're a nation under God because less than half of us are seeking God at all. And I thought that's kind of interesting because the previous quote said we're a godless empire. And I think you're going to have to figure out, are we one nation under God or are we a godless empire? Mm. And I think when you put it into a biblical framework, the godless empire is much more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that's, I don't have much more to say.
Have much
about
more.
That.
Well, and it,
this is maybe, goes too, back this to maybe the point. Too much already.
It's too much. Also, what is the we? If the we is the church, then that is a shameful statement. We're spiritually and biblically ignorant and illiterate. If we're talking about the church, like, oh man, yeah, let's go fix that. If we're talking about America, it's back to my point I just had. We shouldn't be surprised by that. People in America don't know the Bible. Okay.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. Okay. Then there's only one other thing. I'm just going to move us right along to the back cover. The back cover says, remember to vote. And then it says, the Bible tells us to pray for all those in authority, we may live peaceful and quiet lives in godliness and holiness.
I love that verse.
Which is a great verse. But it doesn't say remember to pray, it says remember to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of telling.
Well, it gives you the desired action and then uses the clout of Scripture that doesn't tell you to do that. It tells you to do something else, but it uses that clout to encourage a different action.
So there you go. Now you don't need to read either one of these magazines. But so if you had to say, Eric, you gave me the green light to bring my magazines into the studio today.
I allowed this show.
You allowed this, yes. What would you say would be like a one takeaway from just going through the magazines like this? What would you hope that, you know, we come away with?
I would hope you are pondering what you take in. And if the stuff you read and the things you watch and the things you listen to are doing this type of thing, especially with Scripture, especially with the assumed authority of the Bible, if it's causing you fear, if it's causing you angst, if it's encouraging you to take actions like this, if it's doing the work, I've said it five times already, if it's doing the work of a political action committee, but in the trappings of
an evangelical association
or something of that nature, just don't read it. Like, this got me worked up. I don't know what it would be like to read this every month or every week or be consuming this type of thing. It is not going to have you living in the posture that Jesus encouraged. Do not be fearful. And listeners, I don't want you to be fearful. I don't want you to walk into the election full of uncertainty and angst that, oh my goodness, everything I care about is going to fall apart. That's not true. And your most important identity is unchanged by the results of this election. And if you are being discipled to engage in politics in a way like we've just read through, I don't think those are helpful disciplers. And I would encourage you to get a different discipler, whether that's someone at your church or maybe just different publications or what. But be critical about what you're intaking, because these things, even if they're flimsy, they will form you in how you engage in the world and how you engage in the way you think about God, the way you think about your identity with Him. And you want to choose good things to let you to influence you in that way.
Well, I think they form you in the way you think about your country too.
Yeah,
that you know, everything's going to hell in a handbasket, when in fact, you know, there are a number of good things, and mm-hmm. you can enjoy living here and be thankful for living here and mm-hmm. all the things.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But I think if I had to say what's the takeaway, is that Christians need an evangelical identity.
Mm.
Namely, we have to identify with the person who is at the center of the good news,
mm-hmm.
not with mm-hmm. the Republican Party, not with other organizations, but with Jesus. And it's where we started the whole
right.
conversation, because what happens here is this gives me a different identity,
right?
Or suggests that my whatever I am as a Christian must bow to
mm-hmm.
this other identity. And I would really want to encourage you to say, you know what, I belong to Jesus, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, however you can vote, their vote, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you have your clear conscience going with any one candidate, with any one ballot measure, whatever you end up mm-hmm. voting on, you know, that's fine. But don't sell your soul to a political party that really doesn't represent Jesus.
Right.
So that would be my quick takeaway, is let's just have an identity of as Jesus followers, period.
Well, and I was pondering this, like, well, you blindsided me with these magazines, and I reacted to them for sure. And I was just pondering why did I have such an intense reaction? And peel back the curtain a little bit to the listeners. I'm preaching this coming Sunday, and we have a weekly preaching meeting. And I get to / have to preach on the death of Jesus on the cross on Sunday. And I say have to because, like, okay, you pick that up. That's heavy stuff. I'm glad to do it, but it'll be heavy. And we had our preaching meeting amongst four other guys who are going through this, and we just kind of plumbed the depths a little bit of, I don't even know if I can do this without breaking down, but the King of the universe gave himself to us and died on a cross. And that's not even the most dramatic thing that happened that day. He endured the relational strain and the relational pain of all the sin. And when he was on the cross hanging there, the most dramatic and painful and difficult thing was when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? When he became sin on the cross for us. And then to realize, wow, the King died for me and rose again and gives me the benefits of his death and the benefits of his life. There were multiple guys in that meeting just weeping, considering how beautiful that is. And then to see people saying, yeah, we're the evangelistic association. We're supposed to be pointing to the King, and put down that action and pick up something so grubby and small and meaningless in comparison. I don't even know how to deal with that. That contrast is so dramatic. And if you are picking up something small, you have to drop something so big. And please do not drop something so big as belonging to the King of the universe that gave himself to be, it's the scriptures say, be our ransom. That's what we're talking about. And that identity is so much better. And can you engage these smaller things? Yes, but only as smaller things. And do not switch them. Do not substitute them. Do not trade them. The trade is not worth it at all. And you're getting robbed if you make that trade.
Well, the good news is what you just described in Jesus dying on the cross for us.
Mm-hmm.
That is the evangel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's not socialism versus freedom.
Right.
There's no good news in that.
Right.
So,
yeah, and we'll tie it all the way back. Evangel is, evangelion is a political word. It's good news that the King has come and he has victory. Mm-hmm. And that is a far better political news than we can see in any of these short-term things. So,
perfect. Let that be the last word.
All right. Well, friends, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and rate us. If you find what we're doing helpful, a review would go a long way to getting this to other people. And share it with a friend. If you have questions, send them to comment@cityonahillpodcast.com. And we look forward to the next conversation.